In den letzten Wochen hat sich der LinkedIn-Algorithmus komplett verändert und dies wurde zum ersten Mal jetzt in einem umfangreichen Report mit Zahlen, Daten und Fakten bestätigt. Der LinkedIn-Experte Richard van der Bloem aus Holland hat auf 123 Seiten dokumentiert, was in den letzten Wochen mit dem Algorithmus passiert ist und Empfehlungen abgegeben, worauf es jetzt ankommt. Und das habe ich als Anlass genommen, um Richard für ein Interview zu buchen, um ihn wirklich fast eine Stunde auszufragen, worauf es jetzt im Content ankommt, welche großen Chancen er sieht, um so schnell wie möglich zu wachsen und vor allem, was man jetzt über den Algorithmus wissen muss. Wenn dich diese Themen interessieren, dann sieh dir das Video unbedingt bis zum Ende an. Da sind unglaublich viele spannende kleine Tricks, Hacks drin, die ich selbst noch nicht kannte. Und wenn du mir einen kleinen Gefallen tust, dann like dieses Interview. Das würde mich extrem freuen, um das Video ordentlich zu pushen. Und jetzt wünsche ich mir ganz viel Spaß mit dem neuen Interview. I am super excited about this interview. I think Richard, whole LinkedIn was expecting your report on the new algorithm, and I was super excited to read it through, see a lot of stuff that I realized in the last couple of weeks, and I'm super excited to discuss a lot of things that were in this report. So happy to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me, Robert. Thank you.
So the first question is maybe the most tricky one, but I'm really curious about it because I was trying to find a headline for the recent algorithm to make it really simple for the people to really on the meta, like on the first level to explain what happened. Did you find for yourself some kind of headline in terms of, I don't know, the reach decreased, but here are some good news. Do you have anything?
Wow, that's a very original question. I hadn't prepared for that one. No, I don't have like the killer headline that like summarizes the conclusions of the report. I think for two reasons. First of all, this report has been more extended and more data and more different topics than any other previous reports we published. So. It would have been something that we could have done like 4 years ago, but now I don't know where to start. I don't know what to emphasize. Second reason is that we needed to stay away from anything that could cause, how do you say that?
It's like an oversimplification of the topic.
Yeah, so if I would say like a title like, I don't know, reach down but engagement is up, I mean that's oversimplified and that wouldn't do right to all the details that are in the report. There's another thing that we needed to stay away from, everything that was related to LinkedIn, because the LinkedIn legal department reached out to us and they were not quite happy about the report because they said like, people think that it comes from us or people think that it's LinkedIn related. And, you know, I said, it's not. Everybody knows that I'm not working at LinkedIn, but we had this huge disclaimer and I needed to like do a lot of official things. So that's also why we stayed away from anything with LinkedIn and a headline. And so that's why it's called Algorithm Insight Report and not LinkedIn Algorithm Report.
Oh, that is some juicy stuff right at the beginning, Richard. I love it. So you got so much attention of the platform that they really like are like, we got to be careful what he's like publishing there.
It's two things. So basically our last report, October 2022, got a lot of exposure, over 4 million views on LinkedIn. And actually it has been used by LinkedIn's own employees, especially the ones that need to guide their paying customers to more success. They have been sharing this report with their clients, okay? And I think way at the top of LinkedIn, they were not quite happy that they were using like external reports for their clients. Yeah. So that was the first thing. Second thing is that LinkedIn started last summer with a quest to go after professionals that have LinkedIn related services that they needed to be compliant with their brand and trademark policy, which of course is their right. That's why you see a lot of people now with the LinkedIn trademark symbol and with the official disclaimers. A lot of people at the moment are changing titles from their podcasts, from their LinkedIn lives, from their books, because LinkedIn doesn't want the official trademark or the official name to be associated with anything that's not directly from them themselves.
Okay, got it. Okay, so we got this out of the way, but it was worth a shot to try to find a headline for the changes.
Impossible.
I got it. No. Something that I really realized was that in the last like 2 months, I think it started that my reach and my content really like changed. We had a content strategy for over, I think, 3 years that we focused on the combination of social content. So like personal content with storytelling and like expert content where we talk about our topics. And in the last like 2 or 3 months, it really changed that my professional or expert content really started to get some reach that it never had before. And my social content dropped like 50%, but the engagement stayed the same. And that was really interesting because that was an observation for me that it makes totally sense that LinkedIn decreases like the social stories and pushes a little bit more like the professional content. Is this something that you found in your report, like, is it a shift to more professional content?
Except from what we found in the report, what you have noticed is something that was announced in June.
Like by, a year ago or something almost,
yeah, in
right?
June. Yeah. June, LinkedIn chief editor Daniel Roth, he said that they were going to show more personal related content to your connections and more thought leadership content to your followers. And because your followers in general are much more active with your content than your connection, that's something that a lot of people don't realize, but your followers are normally much more engaging than your connections. Because for example, my connections are also people I met like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, like former colleagues, but they don't necessarily are interested in my content.
Got it.
But people who have recently started to follow me, they follow me because they want to see my content. So LinkedIn said like, the more expert content we are going to shift to your followers and the more personal content we are going to shift to your connections. So it's something that should have happened because it was announced. What we see in general is that reach has declined also on expert content. It has declined somewhere between 25-40%, while the engagement for a lot of content stays the same. So you get less reach, but you get the same amount of comments and likes. I think it has something to do with, like, during the pandemic and also the year after, we had a lot of personal stories. Everybody was sharing these things from at home. So that really topped like the feed. And I think they just switched the button down and said like, okay, we're a professional network. So we turned down the professional, the personal stories, and we emphasize more the expert content. So that makes sense to me as well.
Happy to hear that, because it was for us and a lot of our clients, a gut feeling that they're shifting this. And I remember that they really announced it in June and nothing happened for a couple of months. And I was like, okay, they're saying something and nothing happening. And then it was happening. And I was like, okay, that's great news, because I think it's way easier to stand out with good expert content if you're really good in your area, besides like coming up with great stories every time.
It's so first of all, the what was announced in June is something we saw end of September, start of October. That was when the algorithm really started to shift. And except from your expert content standing out, I mean, it's also a fact that especially last year, the beginning of the year, my feed was flooded with irrelevant selfies and people saying I had a burnout. I went on holiday to Hawaii and now I earn a six-figure month income. You know, that was more or less. Or I was an alcoholic, I saw the light, and now I have a successful gin tonic business. Something like that. And it was completely full of those kind of stories. And I was like, okay, I can do with less of those stories and I can do with a bit more of like in-depth content. So I think it's for the good final in the end.
I'm absolutely with you that it's for the good, and I think it's for the platform for the good. So the clients that we have are most of the time like founders and like CEOs of startups and smaller companies, and they have really limited time. And I asked them before I did this interview with you, like, what should I ask Richard? Yeah, I have a limited amount of questions. What should I ask? And I see this picture of the different types of like formats. Is it documents, text and image? Do I text only? Do I do an article? Do you have some suggestion for people that like post like 3 times a week, what to focus on? Or maybe is it something that you changed since you did this report, change on your own like content strategy to emphasize one thing that is better that you would change?
No, the only thing I'm really aware of, and you can see it if, for example, you check my last 10 posts, I think you will see 5 different formats. Mm-hmm. You will see like document posts, you will see a video, you will see a text only post, you will see polls. So one of the conclusions from a report is that people who mix up the formats of their content get better impressions than if you say like, nah, I only do text plus one image. Like I keep doing text plus one image. So it's like almost like LinkedIn or your audience is getting bored of the same stuff over and over. But if they see today a video, tomorrow a document post, the day after a poll, you mix the formats, you get better results. That's a thing that I'm more aware of than before we released the report. So I'm really thinking, for example, this morning I had a GIF because I wanted to post a document post, but yesterday was a document post. So I kept my document post, for example, for tomorrow. If you look at all the stats we have in the report, I mean, there are like almost 25 pages about the different formats and what is the ideal if you publish text only a video. I'm going to be very honest. I know it, but I still write on my intuition rather than with a checklist. So if it says like a text only post should have ideally 2,400 characters, I know it needs to be longer than average, but I'm not going to count. And if I have 1,800 or 3,000, I still post it. So, and that's also my advice to people say like, wow, this is a lot. And how do you implement this? It's more about awareness that if you do different things, that maybe you should adapt your strategy, but for God's sake, please use your intuition and keep, and also keep observing what works for you. I mean, what works for me could not work for you or the other way around. So that's even more important.
But I really like it because I got really lazy in the last 3 or 5 years. I found my winning formula with like a text and a personal image, and it worked really well. And I spiced it up a little bit sometimes with a carousel or a document or with, I don't know, a video. But to emphasize it, to really like do some like different formats every week, because I think it's some kind of maybe content fatigue that people always see the same. And it's always something interesting when week after week something new happens or day after day. That's really a good finding.
But your conclusion is spot on, because a lot of people say it's the algorithm that doesn't like you to publish 5 text posts in a row. I seriously doubt if it's the algorithm. I think it's the human behavior. I think if people always see the same type of post from Robert, after 3 days seeing your personal image with a story, they go like, ah, that's another story. Let's scroll. But if they see then a PDF or a video, they stop and they're going to check it out. So I think it's more the human audience that influences the algorithm. But, you know, it makes sense, because some people like just to watch a video. They don't like to read. Or some people don't like to go through 16 slides. They just want to have one story. So you mixing up your content and present it in different ways probably resonates with a bigger audience than just having one like preferred format that you're going to use.
Love it. I'm taking this away from this interview already. And another thing that I realized that was really interesting, I'm always looking, or for the last years, I was always looking like which post hit like 10,000 or more views. That was always like a success formula for me. What is it? And really in the last like 2 or 3 months, I was really struggling to see a pattern, because it was social content, it was expert content, it was all the different stuff. And 2 things stood out, and maybe you can say something about on your report. First thing was really the headline was stronger than ever. It was really like in your face. I think I'm pretty good at headlines, but these headlines were really like, okay, they're hitting pretty hard. And the second thing that I was observing was that the comment section was crowded like never before on these posts. So I have way longer comments, and all the posts that really hit 10,000 views, they had like 100, 150, 200 like quality comments. Is this something we should focus on more to get really like quality discussions on the posts?
So to start with the second conclusion, yes, that's also stated in the report. So what LinkedIn wants to happen on the platform is discussions, conversations. That mm-hmm. should be the goal of your content. Like,
yeah,
I think probably we want people to go from our content to a profile and I don't know, contact or buy something, but LinkedIn's interest is to have more conversations, discussions. So if you get a post that gets a lot of indirect comments means a comment on another comment. Okay, so comment threads, indirect comments. If you get a lot of those, that's really an acceleration of your growth of your post. So one of the tactics we have been doing ourselves and we're also teaching our clients is you create a post, but instead of putting 100% of your insights in the post, you put like 80% of your insights in the post, then go to the comments and you leave one or two comments with additional insights. So now people can not only comment on the post, but can also start to comment on your comment, creating those mini threads, which will accelerate your growth. So definitely indirect comments are very important.
Love it, Richard. Give me more of that stuff. Yeah, never heard that before. Love it. Yeah.
No, and the first thing you said, it's something that is really difficult to measure.
Yeah.
Because what's the definition of a good hook? I mean,
yeah, you're right.
Maybe you say like, I wrote a very strong hook and I go like, nah, for me, that doesn't do it. But it's true that the more people that click on see more, because LinkedIn only shows the first three lines, the more people that click on see more, the more acceleration you will get. And when do people click on see more? When the first two sentences make sense or are painful or are triggering or make them curious. So I think the most important part of your post is your hook, because that's where people decide whether to read it, check it out, or continue scrolling.
Yeah. That's really interesting to hear. And these indirect comments, I really never heard that term. And that is really interesting because I was always like, the people are commenting and I'm saying thank you and that's it. And I started realizing that and starting conversation beneath already these comments, and I saw this traction and that was really interesting. One part that I found in your report that was really interesting and stood out for me was this engagement impact ratio on own posts, where you have like one like, and a comment is like 15 points and a repost is like 10 points. Does that really mean that one comment is like worth 15 likes?
No. Yes. The impact, of one comment on the growth of your post is more or less the same than 15 likes. So a like for me is like, a like is how people greet each other. Like you see somebody, you say, hey, everything okay? Yes, everything okay. And we move on. It's not a substantial action. But a comment is when you greet someone and say, hey, Robert, it's been a long time. What have you been up to? Tell me more. Yeah. So that's really interest. But a like is something that I do if I think, this person expects me to engage, but I really don't like the content that much, so I give him a like, you know? Like, I've done my etiquette.
Yeah.
But a comment is so much more powerful. A repost as well, because a repost, I tell LinkedIn, show this original post to my network. So that means that I feel that it's worth sharing with my network. So the two biggest accelerators that you can get on your own post is when people comment on your post or when people repost your post.
That's really interesting because I think they have like, I think it's a little bit like on YouTube where they're optimized for watch time. And I think it's on LinkedIn like discussion time. I think there is more value when people really engage and comment on each other's post. And that's really interesting because I have the feeling maybe you still remember the data from your report before. Did this change? Did comments like go up in the impact of growth, or did it stay the same? Because I always had the feelings, but I never saw the data
No,
for it.
it has always been, well, always, I don't know, but since we did the report, I remember from the first report in 2019 that comments were like 8 times stronger as likes, something like, or 7 times stronger. So it was already that a comment, and it makes sense because if I write a comment, the engagement is stronger because I give my opinion or I give an insight or I ask a question. What I like is just like, it's like just a click. It's nothing more. But the difference between the impact of a like and a comment has like grown further apart. Like a comment has now like much more power than a like.
Yeah, and I really like your explanation, like that you greet people and say hi and that's it. And I have the feeling that people are really like liking a lot of stuff, but to go really into a post, take the time to read it and comment is really something else. And it's really nice to see that LinkedIn like prefers it and gives you more growth. One thing that I really am interested is in that I saw in the last years that you always came up with, if the first hour is really good and you get a lot of traction, it's really like your post is set up for success over the day. And I heard this, that it really changed, that it's not really like this golden hour anymore, that it spreads over the day. Do you have something like an indication how long a post works? And I also saw some data that you said that posts are getting also on the second day or on the third day some visibility. Can you say something about this?
Yeah, so the difference between the last report, October 2022, so that's like 15 months ago, is that back then 85% of your reach, your impressions, you would get on your first day. So that means that only 50% would come from second, third, and so on. So like almost all the engagement, all the reach comes from the first day. Now it's like 70%, 70, which means 30% comes from your second and third day. Okay, so posts do have a longer lifespan. I still believe that the first hour is very important, because if in the first hour your post doesn't fly, it's very difficult to catch up over time and get the same reach compared to if your post gets a lot of traction the first hour. So I always advise people, you know, make sure that when you post, your audience is live, stick with the same posting time. That's also, I always post between 8 and 9 in the morning. And it's not only that you train the algorithm to bring traffic at that moment to your post, but you also train your human audience. I have really people, believe it or not, that sent me a message at 9:30 on LinkedIn and say, "Hey, did I miss your post today?" And I go like, no,
really?
Like yeah. 9:30, if I haven't posted, I get on average 5 to 6 DMs from people saying, "Hey, did I miss your post today?" So people are waiting.
Richard, and you're late today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's
exactly
your post?
Exactly. No, because imagine all the people that If they ring your bell, they get the notification, no?
Yeah.
And they are used to, probably with their cup of coffee or tea or whatever, or their breakfast, to see the bell and say, "Richard published this post between 8 and 9. So if they don't see it, they go like, "Hey, did I miss it?" And then I go like, "No, sorry, I'm late today." So I always try to stick between 8 and 9. So you train the algorithm, you train your human audience, you get more reach. And I really focus on being present around the moment that I publish. So I don't post and ghost. It's not that I open my laptop, I create my post and I close my laptop. No, I'm engaging with other content creators. I'm engaging with the first 10 to 15 comments I get. I add 2 additional comments of my own to get the indirect comments. So it's like more like half an hour that I'm there when I'm publishing my content.
That's perfect for my next question, because if you're really busy and you don't have a lot of time and you maybe have half an hour a day to spend time on the platform, not doing the content, but do like stuff like this, is it the half hour that you would invest when you post like your post and be around, like start commenting on other creators' posts?
If you only have half an hour a day, I would do it differently. Then I would say, okay, around the moment that you post, 5 minutes prior to your own post, you start engaging, you publish your post, and you stay 10 minutes around. So that's 15 minutes, okay? Mm-hmm. Then, like, I don't know, probably 4 hours later, I would check in for 5 minutes, select a few comments, and respond to those comments, okay? And I would do the same, like 8 hours after I published. So at the end of my working day, I would go back in 10 minutes and look at some interesting comments to like respond to. So I would then, if I have half an hour, I would do 50 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Because if you only do it at the beginning and you get more comments and you stop engaging with the comments, you see that the growth will be like flatter, okay? So it's very important that you like nurture your own post during the first day.
That's really good to hear, and that you really like take some time over the whole day to engage with the comments, and that people really, can see that you're active. So from a growing perspective in terms of like followers on LinkedIn, do you have like a strategy or tactics on your mind to say, hey, how can I grow my followers in 2024? What are like your core strategies? Because for example, I talked to Jay Alec and he was really like on commenting a lot with the right people. He was less on the content side. I talked to Justin Welch and he was less on the commenting side, more on the good content side. And it was really interesting to see. Do you have your own formula for growth that you can share?
It's not that I have a winning formula. So I noticed that, especially the last 2 years, I remember August 22. Mm-hmm. I remember that my girlfriend bought me a big balloon saying 50K followers. And we were in a bar in Valencia because I said to her, wow, I'm going to cross 50,000 followers. And she went out, didn't know what she went to do, and she bought me a balloon. And I even posted a picture on LinkedIn with the balloon, like being a happy child, 50,000. So 50,000 followers. I'm on LinkedIn since 2005. So it took me like 17 years to get 50,000 followers. Crazy. But in the last 18 months, I grew 120,000 followers in addition. So I'm really like accelerating. Crazy. For me, it's a combination. So first of all, at the moment, we still have creator mode. So I noticed when I switch creator mode on and I have the follow button instead of the connection button that I grew like five times faster, because now the primary action for people is to follow and not to connect.
And it's easier for the people, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And also, don't forget that a lot of people, they don't find the connect button. They don't click on more and go for connect. So they just see follow and they think, I can only follow this guy. Follow. Okay. So that was one of the things. So if you write good content and people want to connect with you, but you present the follow button, you get like five times more followers compared to connections. And then I think, well, it's easy, no? Because you said Justin says publishing content, Jay says commenting. I think it's the mix that does the work. I do not publish the same amount of content than Justin. I do not have 500,000 followers. I do definitely not comment as much as Jay does, because he comments like a madman, like 500, 600 comments a day. Yeah. And he blocks an hour to do that. He blocks a complete hour to do that. I cannot block a complete hour of my day. I'm too busy. But I've noticed that consistency in publishing, I stepped up my game and I committed to six times a week. That's what I do, six times a week. That's so impressive. I noticed that having six posts a week, different formats, but also different pillars like personal story, thought leadership, industry related, educational posts. All these things I mix up, and now I see that I get a lot of followers. It's also that when people are going to be able to use your content and to create their own post and do the mentioning, that you get a lot of followers. I'll give you an example. So we published the Algorand report last Monday, okay? And I know that this post is not going to get the best results because it's 123 pages. You cannot read it on screen. So probably people are going to save it, or people don't know what to do with a 123-page report. So we got, 80,000 views, which was only 20% of the views we got a year ago. Then I got 400,000 views. So for some reason, LinkedIn really maybe they turned down the button. Then when was it? Saturday, a guy in Australia creates a text post that started with, I digested a 102-3-page report, and this is my takeaways. And it was only a text post, no images, just text. And it was Saturday, I was playing football, I was doing my stuff, I was doing grocery, so I was not in LinkedIn. And I checked LinkedIn in the afternoon, and I saw that I grew 1,500 followers. And I was like, what? Because the days before, I had, because of the Algorithm Report, like 200, 300 followers a day. But now I had like 1,500 followers since the last time, 4 hours before I looked. So I turned to LinkedIn because I needed to know what happened. And it was the text post that 6 hours after being published already got 4,000 likes and plus 1,000 comments. The guy sent me a print screen. He reached 1.5 million views with the text post that only has 6 to 7 details of a 123-page report. So this tells me a few things. First of all, people like snackable content. They do not like in-depth content because they don't have the time to digest. They like, present me the snackable things. Okay, that's the first thing. Second, if you offer people content that they can reshare with their audience because they really like it and they do the proper mentioning, they say like, this was from the report from Richard, then a lot of these people that follow this 1.5 million view post, they click on my name and they click on follow because they say, I want to connect with the source. Yeah. So that's also something. And you see a lot of people, for example, also with Jay and Justin, they repurpose the content of Jay and Justin. They download a carousel from Jay and they publish it like on their own profile and say, hey, I really love this carousel from Jay because this, this, and this. So that means that Jay gets a lot of new followers also from that post. So I think, so it's publishing, it's commenting, but it's also create content that is easy to share for your audience.
And I think the main point is also that you bring something of immense value to the platform and to the people, right? And I think this is something everybody can think about. Like your report is maybe not everyone has the time and the resources to do it, but really to publish something where your target audience really like studies this stuff, and thinks that's crazy that I get it for free, is something that I think everybody could use as a marketing strategy as well, right?
I agree. Although it is difficult for a lot of people that I work with. Yesterday, I had a call with a lady I coach. And for her, it's very difficult to find something that she can share that has this unique value because, like you said, you need to have data, you need to have resource, you need to have a very original point of view because otherwise you're just sharing what other people also share. So for me, even for me, like I'm repurposing now some parts of the Algorithm Report because like I said, I'm trying to make it more snackable for people. Yeah. But next to that, it's going to be very hard to have like a more or less comparable piece of content with the same impact because we like literally poured everything into this piece of content.
Yeah, but I really like this idea of snackable content. I like the term. Yeah, I think it's easy to remember. That's really cool. And one huge topic a lot of our clients was really concerned about is the topic of AI, because they don't really use it to write the post, but they use it like to correct it, to give it some kind of different style. Can you elaborate a little bit on the findings? Because everybody was concerned now, can't I use like ChatGPT for correcting my post? Where does it detect the difference or does it at all?
First of all, the algorithm will probably not detect if you use ChatGPT or AI to like rewrite your profile, your post. For example, I use ChatGPT to correct for grammar. I'm not native English. I write all my posts and I write the original content directly in English. So I don't write in Dutch and then go to ChatGPT and say translate. No, I write in English. But I always use like, okay, correct for grammar, okay? Because I don't want to make stupid mistakes. So that's the first thing. And I don't think the algorithm will detect that. Also, I use ChatGPT sometimes to get alternatives for my own hook, okay? Mm-hmm. So if I'm not satisfied with the hook, I go to ChatGPT, I say like, that's my hook, this is the post, provide me with 3, 4, 5 alternatives in a provocative, funny style, okay? And then I get like some alternatives, and it's very often that I combine two of the alternatives and create my own hook, but at least I have some inspiration, okay? So that's why I use ChatGPT. The report says that if you use ChatGPT to write content and without editing, you just publish this content, and especially AI-generated comments, okay? Again, it's probably not the algorithm that detects that, but your network will. I can guarantee you that if I create a post, I can directly see the people who have used AI to comment, because they use words that they normally never use. It's written in a way that I go like, nah, this is not you. This is like AI. And what we see in the report is that those comments generate 5 times less responses from your audience, because people know that it's not you. It's like a bot that has done your job. And also, AI generated images get 6 or 7 times less clicks, because people know like, okay, this is AI generated. It's nice, but I prefer to have some like personal pictures or some like you know, homemade images instead of like AI generated.
Yeah, it's really funny that you're always thinking about, the algorithm is detecting this, but just the people and your followers smart enough to detect it, because I always see these comments where it's like an AI comment and I'm like, okay, I got it. Yeah. And
I think a lot of people really underestimate the intelligence of their audience. They really think like, hey, I'm going to be a smart ass. I'm going to do this really amazing comments, and it doesn't cost me a lot of time.
Yeah.
But like in a minute, the other person knows like, this is not you, Richard, because you don't write these type of words, these type of phrases. Like, and the funny thing is, I can really be a pain in the ass if I get those comments, because I comment on the comment and say like, hey, but what is your own opinion? I don't care about what your AI is writing. And nobody of these people, maybe one or two, but in general, I get no responses, because people feel busted, or it's just AI not only writing the comments, but only also selecting the post. So they don't even know that they are commenting on the post. So they also don't respond. Like, it's gamifying the platform, and in the end, it will really harm your reputation.
Yeah. It's not a success formula. Yeah, that it's good that you're also against like all automation stuff. I think you don't do yourself a favor with it. No. I'm really curious about some features of LinkedIn that are really not ever used for myself, but I saw that you use it very well and are very familiar with it. Can you say something about LinkedIn audio, like use cases? Should I do it? Should I not do it? What should I do in it? Do you have some insights about it?
Yeah, so we have the report and we have my own experience, which are not like exactly the same. So the report says that all LinkedIn events, so the LinkedIn Live, but also the LinkedIn Audio, get like, I don't know the percentage, but get substantially more reach and engagement compared to 15 months ago. Because it's live content. It's very interactive, it's engaging, and don't forget, if you have an event, live or audio, and you have, let's say, 500 people signing up, they will get 2 notifications prior to the event, like remembering them, in 24 hours, this event starts, in 1 hour, this event starts, okay? So LinkedIn is like actually sending out notifications to your audience, don't miss the event because you signed up. Once the event starts, again, LinkedIn sends out a message to all the attendees. Yeah. The event just started. And there are some really cool things that you can do as an organizer. Like, I would never start my event in the first minute directly with the content, because people always join in like 1 or 2, 3 minutes late. So what I do, for example, in the beginning is telling people like, hey, I'm so glad you joined us. We already have 200 people joining. Just put in the chat, where do you join from? So you get like Paris, Frankfurt, Amsterdam. Mm. Every comment at that moment is directly shared with their network. So people see that these comments come from an audio event live or a live event, and they can rejoin. So, and we did that with the audio event I did with Jasmine, where we were 2 weeks ago, we were at the same time in Bratislava speaking at the same conference.
Yeah.
And Jasmine invited me for an audio event about like, okay, how to create good content and how to get more reach on LinkedIn. So we did the event. We had 2,000 people signing up prior to the event. And Jasmine said exactly the same in the beginning. He said like, okay, like put up a thumbs or put up a heart, because in an audio event, you can write a comment on the post, but in the app, you can only like click on a heart or click on a thumb. But if people do that, they engage with the event, sending out these notifications to the network. So within half an hour, we had 4,000 people joining the audio event. So that was really spectacular. And I redid that tactic with Ivana Todorovic from Authored Up to launch our algorithm report last week, Tuesday. And we again reached 4,300 attendees with an audio event. And I got also 500 new followers just from that event, from people who have never heard of me but joined the event because of that. So I'm really a big fan of audio events more than LinkedIn Live, because with a LinkedIn Live, you need to have, well, you know, you need to have your camera, you need to have your sound, you need to have your, like now, you need to have your third-party recording tool. But an audio event, it's so easy to create. You just open it with your mobile. You can literally do it walking your dog. So it's very easy to do, and it got a lot of traction. So I'm definitely going to do more audio events myself.
Okay, you got me sold there. Yeah, gotta do it. Yeah. Cool. And can you say something about like LinkedIn newsletters?
Yeah. There are some positive things. There are some like challenges. So the positive things is if you have a LinkedIn newsletter and you publish an article, LinkedIn sends out a notification to all the subscribers. Okay, so that's a good thing. I didn't write a newsletter for 6 months. It was May 23, and then I came back in November 23 to announce the algorithm report. And it was unbelievable, because I remember that in May I had like 23,000 subscribers for my newsletter, because you start with zero. If you launch a newsletter, you have zero subscribers. It's not that you like directly have all your connection followers. No, people need to click on the button like subscribe. So you start with zero. So I did some newsletters like 2 years. I reached 23,000 subscribers. I didn't do newsletters for 6 months. And when I came back in November, I saw 56,000 subscribers. And I was like, how? How did I grow 30,000 subscribers in 6 months without having published any newsletter? Now, the good thing is, when people start to follow you and you have a newsletter, LinkedIn automatically sends out a notification to them like, Richard has a newsletter, subscribe. It's in your invite box. So if you have a newsletter, each person that starts to follow you also gets the request from LinkedIn, do you want to subscribe? And since I grew my followers with 50,000, 30,000 of them selected, yes, I also want to follow. So those are the positive things, okay? So you have LinkedIn helping you to get subscribers, you have the notifications, and also when we talk about SEO purposes, it's a very good thing. Okay, SEO-wise, is a very good thing to write articles and newsletters. When it comes to organic reach within LinkedIn, it's very poor. So it's very poor compared to like the document posts or all types of other posts. Like it's almost like LinkedIn is like almost hiding them in a separate like place. So I write them to establish my thought leadership, I write them for my Google findability, and I write them because I have substantial subscribers. I also had a tactic to, in each LinkedIn newsletter, I put a link to my email newsletter. So I also say like, hey, except from my LinkedIn newsletter, I have a bi-monthly weekly emails newsletter, and you can like click here. So I converted 7,000-8,000 people from LinkedIn to my email newsletter. So that's also a very good tactic.
Okay, that's a really good tactic. I think this is the interesting case, because I was a little bit worried that it's a feature that maybe LinkedIn is not really convinced and they will take it down at some point. But if you really get it in your email list, that is a smart move.
Yeah, and don't forget, articles, newsletters, is rich data for LinkedIn, because articles and newsletters have a lot of additional resources, additional media, hyperlinks, external links. So every person that publishes articles gives LinkedIn a lot of additional data, makes the platform more visible for Google. So I don't think they will kill the feature very soon, because it's a very valuable feature to do like reverse database building for their content.
Yeah. Okay. Two last questions I got for you, Richard. First one is, it's always something that people ask a lot on my webinars, like, what about hashtags? Should I do them in my content or not? Do you have some findings about them in your report?
Well, if you do them in the content, it's up to you. I've stopped using them. There is no substantial increase in your reach using hashtags. The only thing where you can use them is to like tag your content for a specific topic. So if I tag my content with a hashtag marketing, there is a possibility that people that are interested in marketing will find my content. However, that possibility is very low, because if you scroll in your feed, the first 50 posts will not show any posts that are there because of your hashtag. And people normally don't scroll further than 50 posts. So LinkedIn is also going to remove them from the top of the profile. So the creator mode hashtags are also going, like, are disabled. I really think that it's not a good marriage, LinkedIn and hashtags. It never been, and I don't see anything positive happening in the upcoming year. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I take it, because I'm not also in huge favor of them. So yeah, we get rid of them. So last question, I'm really interested about it. It's a little bit looking into a crystal ball, but some people that have been long time on LinkedIn are already, the chances to really like build something for yourself, to get reach and content, it's already too late. Yeah, I think you've been on the platform for a lot of years. And I think in the last 18 months, you've seen it for yourself that you're growing, I think, like crazy. How do you see yourself, or how do you see the future of LinkedIn? Are we just at the beginning of the platform, or is it already the phase that it's getting really crowded and really competitive?
There are a few things to your question. So first of all, if you look at the people that publish content on a weekly base, it's still 1.1%. Mm-hmm. So that means that if you publish content, let's say twice a week, you outperform 99% of all the members. Okay.
That's a nice data. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's funny, because if I tell people who are not active on the platform that only 1% publishes content on a weekly base, you get two reactions. The first one is the people who get it, and they go like, hey, wow. So if I step up my game, I have this huge advantage. And you have the other ones who say, so why should I? Because if 99% doesn't do anything, then I can also. So, okay, it's up to you. I think with the right approach, with the right strategy, this is actually the best moment to grow your business on LinkedIn, because you have so many additional tools compared to 5 years ago. There is so much rubbish on LinkedIn that if you do the good things, you can stand out. You know, if you have this insightful content strategy, you will stand out from all the people who copy paste, use AI or whatever. So that for sure. However, I also worry a bit thinking about the trust and credibility of the platform, because I know that more and more people that have been on LinkedIn from the first hour, so people that have been on LinkedIn more than 15 years, and also a lot of executive C-level, they now see LinkedIn as a platform where there is a lot of spam. There are a lot of like in-mails sent every day to people to try to sell them something on the first approach. It's not about what LinkedIn used to be, relationship building, networking. Yeah. It's just like sitting ducks. You know, we can target the people. AI can really also harm the trust and credibility, because if your post is written by a robot, your comments are coming from a robot, then, you know, where is the human element in that? I don't know if LinkedIn doesn't realize this, or if they don't care, or maybe they're working at a solution, but I see more and more of my peers becoming a bit of fed up with making this effort in creating valuable content, which is a substantial resource of their time, and then their content gets like, I don't know, 1,000 views, and people who are gamifying the system using bots, engagement bots, automation, they get like much more visibility. So I think LinkedIn needs to fix that. They need to fix the balance between giving genuine content creators more reach and being much harder in punishing people who gamify the system. If they don't do that, I think it's going to be very tricky in a year or 2 years from now with the rise of AI and bots and automation where we are going to be.
Yeah, I really like this. Yeah, very realistic approach to it. And I think it's up to LinkedIn to navigate it, to really support like good content creators that are doing really a great job and yeah, keep away the spam and the DMs and the AI content. I really like that because yeah, if they can manage to do that, I think we will all have a great future on this platform. Richard, definitely. Thank you so much for your time. It
thank
was
you,
very insightful. I know now what to do and thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert, for having me.
In dem Interview sprechen wir immer wieder von Jasmine Alec, einem der größten Content Creator auf LinkedIn und den habe ich vor ein paar Monaten interviewen dürfen und den Link findest du hier. Wenn dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dann sieh dir das Interview mit Jasmine unbedingt an. Da sind unglaublich viele Tipps und Tricks, zusätzliche nochmal drin, die dich wirklich absolut begeistern werden und insofern sieh dir jetzt das Interview mit Jasmine an.